Mr. Summers?
Okay, if it pleases the court, Attorney Joseph Summers on behalf of Thomas McCants. Actually, I'm so unfortunate, I think, that I came after the case that I did, because to some extent it's a different form. It's almost the same type of a thing. Basically, can a trial court basically give something a spin, which means they don't have to use reason and they don't have to basically stick to what really were the facts of that case. The case at hand that I'm handling, there's really no reason at all, really, to say that my client was a manager, a supervisor. He didn't get any money out of the process. The guy is the other person he supposedly supervised, who's only one person. That person made a profit. My client didn't make a profit. That person.
But is he a supervisor when he doles out drugs from the safe
for
Whitaker to sell?
He's a clerk. He worked for Tabor. They both basically had a connection with Mr. Tabor. By that logic, that would be that any time you ever went, let's say, to a bank and somebody filled out an order, that person is automatically your supervisor. Tabor and Whitaker had a relationship before my client was ever involved.
What about when he buys cocaine for Whitaker to sell?
He doesn't. We don't even know that. There's nothing in the record that says that. There's nothing in the record that says that he bought that money, that didn't come from Tabor or it didn't come from anybody else. It is in the record. He didn't make a profit. He never made any profit at all.
But does our case law require a manager to retain any of the profits from a dealer's sale?
Actually, there is case law on it that says basically it lays out the five criteria or so on that was put in my brief. He doesn't meet any of them, and that is one of them. Did he get a bigger cut? He didn't get any cut. Actually, he got less of a cut. I mean, really it all comes down to is this. If the government says, you know what, we're giving a deal to this guy, And in the case at hand, this is all part of the record outside of the brief, but it's all part of what took place, Mr. Whitaker got the safety belt. Mr. Whitaker, by his own admission, had a gun. Government says, we ain't going to apply a gun? That's okay. So basically, but then we want to say, because we want him to look good, because we got our own reasons, we then say, hey, Judge, put a different spin over here on this guy. Put a different spin on it. And therefore, Judge, even though he doesn't do anything at all that's anything different at all, in fact, he doesn't have a profit, he really has a very small role, we're going to say he's a supervisor. So the main reason is, therefore, Mr. Whitaker looks good, and we have our reasons. And that's what it all comes down to. They had the reasons to bet on this guy. And the whole thing about it is, I mean, really is that there's nothing in the record at all. In fact, to show how weak the government's case was, is the fact that in their brief, to prove their case, basically they had to rely upon things that he didn't testify to. They had to give it a different spin. And they had to do that because there was no other way. There was no other way to say it, because even Whitaker himself, their own witness, basically said, no, I went and contacted these people. Whitaker said, no, he didn't get a profit. Whitaker said it was business as usual before his tiny involvement and after his tiny involvement. And all it comes down to is, again, is it like a crap shot? A judge, all we got to say is, we got spin, we give a spin, Judge, okay, that's what you want, that's what's going to happen. The whole thing is, actually, to be totally honest, it's downright silly. It's silly. There's no reason to think my guy was worth involved. And anyways, it's downright silly. And I think it's the case, even at your first initial reaction to it, you can see that there's no reason to say that he was a manager or a supervisor or anything of that magnitude. And unless the court has any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Summers.
Thanks.
And Mr. Everett Roy?
Good morning. I'm John Vaudry. I represent the United States below. And
okay, so how is McCants not a middleman in the Tabor organization?
He, at one point, may have been a middleman, Judge. When all this was going on, from the safe gets moved in November, from November to December 4th, when Ms. Fountain was found murdered, Mr. Tabor, all this time, Mr. Tabor's in jail. I would suggest that, in fact, not only did he direct Mr. Whitaker, the events that precipitated Mr. Whitaker's drug dealing during that time period really required McCants to direct him. Because what happened is the safe is sitting there in Whitaker's apartment, he's spending their Confederate's money. He's buying.
So your view is McCann is sort of substituting for Tabor's as the as.
Right, Tabor is basically.
If Tabor's weren't in jail, McCann would be a subordinate figure.
I don't know about their relationship. There's some evidence.
Oh, but that's very important because we need to know what evidence there is in the record that Mr. McCants was acting on his own initiative rather than just implementing Mr. Tabor's orders. But and we all know that, you know, people run enormous organizations from jail.
Certainly true. What we do
especially
know...
Especially in New York.
What we do know, and I believe it's maybe paragraph 20 or so of the PSR, there's information from Whitaker's former girlfriend that she would see the three of them trading money, trading drugs, and so on. Sarah Weiss, I believe. We know that Tabor is in jail, and we know that Whitaker spends his money, about $5,000, to run his own game, essentially buy drugs, sell the drugs. And now we know that Tabor's mad. And neither McCants nor Whitaker disagrees with any of this. In their statements to the police, when I say that, they both are interviewed, come forward after the Fountain murder and make some statements. So we know that Tabor wants that safe moved to McCants' apartment, and Tabor wants his money replenished. Now, to do so, there is no evidence whether he's on the phone daily with McCants or anything like that. There simply isn't any evidence. What we do know is that, and this is the testimony in the record, the safe is in McCants' apartment. During the time period that counts, November to December 4th, it's in McCants' apartment. Whitaker never opens the safe. I think he testified he never got closer than 6 to 8 feet. We know, and this is the point Mr. Summers made in his reply brief, and I want to clarify, there is not any spin on the testimony. In fact, there's two things that happened. If Whitaker found customers, he contacted McCants and said, I've got a customer, they go in the safe, McCants would go in the safe, give him drugs, coke, or crack to go sell. And that's pages 16 and 30. He said the same thing on cross. But the flip side of it, the different scenario occurred when the drugs had been replenished. And with this, Whitaker testified that he never put drugs back in this safe, that more drugs were there, sort of the obvious inference being that they're being replaced by McCants. Because he's the only other person, the only three people knew the combination of the safe. One's in jail, one's Whitaker, and one's McCants. Whitaker doesn't replace any of the drugs. He says, and he testifies, that in that scenario, that when there were more drugs, when they had been obtained, then McCants would verbally contact, I'm not quite sure what he meant by that, but that's what he said. He would verbally contact him, he said, and then ask him to help bag up the drugs. So there's no any disingenuousness in the government's brief. Two different things are happening here.
Is there any evidence that McCants was profiting from the drug sales that he's managing here?
There's really no evidence either way. In cross-examination, Mr. Whitaker said, Mr. Summers asked him, look, he didn't get any money, and Whitaker said, that's not true. It wasn't really explored any further. But really the thrust of the government's contention then and now is that McCants had the safe. He was supposed to make sure that the money was getting there and the drugs were getting sold. Whitaker could only sell drugs when McCants gave him the drugs. Whitaker gave all the money to McCants after he sold the drugs. When there were more drugs apparently obtained by McCants, because he's the only other person putting them in the safe, he contacted Whitaker and said, asked him to bag them up. And I would point out one other thing Judge Crabb relied on. In the pre-sentence, they set out the statements that were made by Mr. Whitaker and Mr. McCants when the investigation of the murder and the drug dealing started. And McCants said, and it's set out in paragraph 19 of the PSR, I directed Whitaker to sell the cocaine in the safe. This certainly isn't some big pizza connection conspiracy, but we got three people, one of them's in jail. One of them wants is the seller, and the other guy's got the drugs, takes the money, and does what he does. So I think the record does support Judge Crabb, and I don't think she was just taking a crapshoot. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Boudreau. Mr. Summers, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Yes, I'll make a couple fast points. First of all, in regards to the record, One, he just basically deferred that it would take place that Mr. McCants would call up Mr. Whitaker. That's not the way it was. There was no testimony to that effect. Whitaker would go there. The time he bagged the drugs was when he went there to get other drugs, and then he bagged it. There was no other separate contact. Second, in regards to where the drugs came from, there's nothing to say that it came from Mr. Whitaker. There's nothing to say that it wasn't business as usual as before the drugs came from Mr. Tabor. Third, in regards to his whole claim that his girlfriend, so on, testified to seeing these people, we disputed that in the PSI. They never attempted to prove it because the whole thing was bunk and all related to this homicide that he has made a point to refer to in his brief and today. It was all bunk. They never tried to prove it because the whole thing was bunk. So that you shouldn't consider that at all. Fourth and lastly is this whole point that McCants basically is his whole thing that he said direct and so on. No. If you go back and if you look at all that, that's the spin. That's the spin that they said. From his description of it, they decided to say he's saying he directed them. It's their spin on what he said.
We do a lot of fine-tuning on these kinds of cases, but is it correct here that the sentence that was imposed could have been imposed without this two-level enhancement?
Well, I guess, technically.
In other words, if the enhancement wasn't imposed, the guideline range would have, the top of the guideline range would have been the bottom of the range as enhanced.
I think in this case, actually, that is true, but I don't see how that is relevant in the slightest, because the fact of the matter is all the reasons why she said he should be at the bottom of the guideline range would have applied if this enhancement did not take place.
But if she would have said, well, I'm not going to apply the enhancement here, but I think you're pretty darn close to this point of being supervisor or a manager or something. So
I think I'd
be at the top of the guideline.
Well, Your Honor, I'd also put forth, this is a pretty close call, the whole thing is basically is we didn't dispute it now, but we did at the time about whether or not there should have been an enhancement for him having a gun. I think that was a pretty close call. So that point in time is basically what you're saying is that if, let's say, you follow the law here, that means over here that gives you a pass, basically, to say, well, who cares about the record? Who cares if we distort the facts? I don't think this court should go along with that kind of reasoning.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Summers. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.